Welcome to the History Slam podcast from ActiveHistory.ca. Here's your host, Sean Graham.
Thank you, Adam. Welcome to the History Slam, everybody. I am Sean Graham, coming at you today nearly live. We are in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I have now been for about 4 months. And naturally, because I have a gigantic ego, I have assumed that the city of Ottawa has collapsed in on itself since I am no longer there and the city just can't sustain itself anymore. So we are checking in with the national capital with friend of the podcast who has been gone from the podcast for a long time. I can't remember the last show you were on. The man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Boyes. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be back.
I really can't remember the last time you were here because you weren't on any of our Congress shows. So nope. That takes us back to May.
May, yeah.
And so definitely not since then. And I don't think you're on any early in the year because we didn't do much early in the year. So it's got to be over a year since you've been on the show.
Year and a bit. Was it the What to Wear to a Birth of the Nation?
That's what I'm thinking.
That might have been. And that was last summer.
Right.
Wow.
So, yeah, so almost 18 months.
My goodness.
So give the listener. People a throw. What have you been up to?
Oh, you know, living the life here in our nation's capital. Not being a student anymore is kind of great. Waiting for my PhD defense. Otherwise, spending time with the wife and the dog and, yeah, just enjoying things.
Very nice. You know, there's a small chance that this podcast could actually be running the day of your defense.
Ooh.
Like, how much fun would that be?
So you might have to change when you do your intro for this. You might have to change it, actually, and say Dr. Boyes.
No, because the podcast goes live at, like, 5 in the morning or something.
Okay, yeah. And
so before the actual defense would take place.
Yeah, I don't think my defense will be then. And I think you might choke a little bit if you have to actually say Dr. Boyes.
Right, and if we're going to get technical, you're not the doctor until the degree has been conferred by the Senate. I believe it's the Senate.
Right. Sorry, my apologies. I forgot that's your stipulation for when the degree is official.
Hey, when it was my turn, you know, I did the defense in October. And people were like, hey, doctor. And I downplayed it. I said no until I got notification that the degree was conferred in December.
All right. Well, then I will try my best to wait until the degree has been conferred before I start referring to myself as Dr. Boyes.
You know, I mean, it's just I think it's respectful to the office.
Well, of course. I mean, if I'm following your footsteps, then cool.
Which, of course, you should try to.
Hey, man, I base my academic career off of you.
That's a shame. Given that I'm unemployed in like 3 months. Congratulations to you.
Hey, we all have to have our dreams, man.
It's true. And if nothing else, this show makes dreams come true.
It does. It's a dream maker.
So like I said, we're gonna check into Ottawa. Now, it's not just to check in with you, I'm sorry to say.
It's okay.
But you are part of this new project that is starting to get some attention in the media and on Twitter. Some people around the city are really starting to pay attention to it. It's called Prime Minister's Row. So
yes.
If you want to just explain, what is this all about?
Well, the Prime Minister's Row is essentially creating a street museum along Laurier Avenue. So anyone who's ever visited Ottawa knows where Laurier Avenue is, specifically Laurier Avenue East. So past the University of Ottawa towards the Rideau River. And it's to try to celebrate and preserve this part of Sandy Hill, this little community in the nation's capital that not many people who live outside of the city know about. Many famous and influential people have lived in Sandy Hill and along Laurier Avenue during our country's history since 1867 moving onwards. We're talking prime ministers, fathers of Confederation, politicians, inventors, business people, you name it. We've had a lot of important people live in this area. And so the Prime Minister's Row is a project to bring to surface these people and where they lived and their contributions to Canadian society over the past 150 years.
How did you find out about it, first off? And then how did you get involved with it?
Well, our good friend Jeremy Garrett actually informed me of this.
Former guest on the show, I should
say. Yes, friend of the show.
Yes.
So Jeremy sent me a text one day when I was working on my dissertation in the summer, and he just says, hey, have you heard of this new project that's going on? And I hadn't. So I went online and I took a look at it, and I was immediately drawn to the project. Being a historian, I thought it was great to try to preserve our history and present our history to not only the people of Ottawa, but of course to the people of Canada as a whole, because it is our national capital, and also to foreign visitors to come and see what our city is all about and our country is all about. So anyway, yeah, I took a look at the website and I emailed the co-founders, Leanne and Sunita, and I just said, hey, I'm interested in this project. Is there any way that I can get involved? And almost immediately I got a response back saying, yes, we're looking for volunteers. We're looking for people to lend their expertise in any way that they can. And so since about June, I think I've been a researcher for this project.
And we were talking before we started recording that this is the sort of thing that the city could really use because, now it's not my original idea, but there's this radius rule in Ottawa that if you are on Parliament Hill, you can go about 15 blocks in any direction and feel like you're in the national capital. There's a lot of stuff within that area. There's the national museums, there's the National Archives, you got the Supreme Court, the National Gallery, the National Arts Center, a bunch of consulates, the British consulates there, the American embassy. There's a lot going on within this radius, including not just, you know, official things, but also the Byward Market would be included in that. So there's a lot of activity within this radius. But once you get outside of that radius, it feels like just any other normal town.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's not really that much going on. There's certain exceptions to that. Lansdowne has started to be a place to go now.
In fact, I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't get a chance to go see it. But with the Ottawa Red Blacks being in the Grey Cup or getting into the Grey Cup game, it was a very exciting place to be. I had a couple friends down there, and they just said the experience was out of this world.
Right. So like stuff like that is really starting to change this radius thing. But for the most part, if you're a tourist coming to Ottawa, you are going to stay in the Parliament Hill area, unless you're going out to the Gatineau Hills or something. But for you're there. So expanding that into Sandy Hill, and like Aaron said, for those who aren't familiar with Ottawa, Laurier Avenue runs parallel to Wellington, and Wellington is the street where Parliament Hill is, and it's a few blocks south, and it's a really really long road, and City Hall's on there. But going east, Sandy Hill, it runs through the University of Ottawa. And once you get past the University of Ottawa, there's not much going on.
No, and except for, as you said, there's a number of embassies that are still kind of tucked away in and around Sandy Hill. If you walk towards Strathcona Park, there's a bunch of embassies in and around there and up towards Charlotte Street and Rideau. But unless you're specifically looking for those embassies or looking for those landmarks, it's almost impossible to find. And I can't imagine many tourists coming to the city and purposefully walking along Laurier Avenue East past the Rideau Canal, unless, of course, they're going to come check out the University of Ottawa. But beyond that, there's really not much. And so that's what the Prime Minister's Row obviously wants to change. They want people to come in and see this cool part of the city and expand that 15-block radius rule and try to make it a more complete national capital.
Right. And I guess the one exception to this notion that there's not much there, there is Museo Park, which is, I believe, in Strathcona Park. But that's a Francophone museum, so if anyone is an Anglophone who's there, they're not going to go seek that out.
Maybe not, yes.
Right, but you know, for the most part, there certainly isn't the same draw to that part of town as there is to other parts of towns.
Exactly.
So it's called Prime Minister's Row, and there's a lot of prime ministers who did live there, of course.
There is.
So, you know, how many guys are we talking about?
At the moment, we're talking about 7 prime ministers and 7 fathers of Confederation that lived in and around the Sandy Hill area at some point during their public career. And I guess this is a good time to put a plug in for the website for our listeners who are interested in learning more about the project and about these figures. The website is www.pmr-apm.ca. And so prime ministers, we're looking at Sir John A. Macdonald, Sir Charles Tupper, Sir Wilfrid Laurier, Sir Robert Borden, William Lyon Mackenzie King, John Diefenbaker, and even Lester B. Pearson.
But they're not all living in the same place, right? Like, these are different houses?
Oh, absolutely. They're kind of spread out all around the place. For example, Sir John A. Macdonald resided at 395 Laurier Avenue East, which is also known as Stadacona Hall. And he was actually living there between 1878 and 1883. So while he was serving his second term as prime minister, he was in this this beautiful, almost mansion on Laurier. And that, if you're not aware that Macdonald lived there, you could walk right past it and never know.
Right, because, I mean, there's a few small plaques that places through the city, but there's really nothing noteworthy. And like you say, unless you're seeking something like this out, you're never going to know.
No, you'll walk right by it. And that's what Prime Minister's Row seeks to rectify as well. Is part of the project is to put some sort of landmark or some sort of notification that an important person in Canadian history resided at this place. I know one of the common complaints about history, if you will, is that there's a disconnect because it's things that happened so long ago and that they may not seem relevant. And a lot of times people forget the human aspect because history, of course, is made by people. And people had to live somewhere when they were living here and or when they were working in and around the national capital. And so Prime Minister's Row will let everyone who walks by know that, hey, an important person in our history resided here. And that's a cool little thing to notice.
Right. No, for sure. And for me, I know I've always been slightly critical of this notion of, hey, come see where this person lived. Just because, especially when it's preserved, because, you know, they always talk about, well, it's their house, but it's been it was restored in, you know, 1850, 1865, 1880. Like, it's just been restored like 400 times. And you and I, when you were here, we walked the Freedom Trail.
Yes.
And I think it's this old meeting house or one of the places on the Freedom Trail, they advertise it as, oh, you can come and, you know, walk where these revolutionaries walked and all this. But they built a subway station right underneath it.
Yeah, and it's almost like they've got a good museum in there, but even then it's just completely changed.
Right, so it doesn't feel the same. So I'm always a little skeptical of these projects that promote or advertise themselves as, oh, come and, you know, see this place as it was, because it's not really as it was to me. but it strikes me that that's not really what this is about.
No, it's not. And it's not about purchasing these houses so that every single one of them becomes a museum in and of itself. It's to point out that these buildings are still there and that they're historically important. In fact, some of the buildings simply just aren't there anymore. Some of the important places that are important figures in Canadian history resided at, they're just simply not there. They've either been torn down or they've been renovated so much that, as you said, they're nothing like what they were in the 1860s or even in the 1920s. But this is even just put a landmark to say at this place in Ottawa, at some point in time, there was a house here and this person resided there.
Right. So it's really more to draw people to a part of the city they otherwise would not go to.
Exactly. It's a way to draw more attention to our city. It's a way to draw more attention to our past and along the way to celebrate not only our history, but the vibrant culture of Ottawa and the contributions of everyone that they made over the course of history to make Ottawa the city that it is.
And it's not just prime ministers, though, because you were mentioning some of the other folks who are notable figures who are also included in this project.
Yes, absolutely. We're talking about, we've got a couple Supreme Court justices that lived in there. We've got, again, some of the fathers of Confederation. But besides the politicians, we've got business people who are living and working in there that had a contribution to Ottawa in some way, civil servants. One of the bigger names, and I wasn't aware of this until I started with this project, was Sir Sandford Fleming. He lived at 309 Daly Street in Sandy Hill, and I believe it's right by the Croatian embassy. If anyone is any of the listeners know that area, they'll know which house I'm talking about. But it's this massive stone house that Fleming lived in between 1870 and 1882. And we're talking about someone who really had a big influence on the world, not just Canada or Canadian politics. So it's kind of nice to be able to walk around and say, hey, Sir Sanford Fleming lived there. In fact, I know I've parked my car in front of his house a bunch of times and never knew that that was his residence for some time.
It was close to the embassy. You're lucky you didn't get towed.
It's true, but I mean, it's one of the only areas that also has 3-hour parking.
Oh, it's in that area.
It is.
Oh, okay, now I know where it is.
Yeah.
When we were talking before, I couldn't picture it, but when you say 3-hour parking, it's sad that that's how I reference Sandy Hill, is the 3-hour parking zone.
3-hour parking zone, yeah, so you know where it is. But then some of the others that lived at Sandy Hill at some point, the famed photographer Yusuf Karsh lived in Sandy Hill for some point. A little bit more research needs to go in there because we're not entirely sure when he lived there exactly, but there is some indication that he was in Sandy Hill for a while. World War I hero and fighter ace Billy Bishop, he lived at 5 Blackburn Avenue between 1940 and 1945. And even Barbara Ann Scott, who grew up in Ottawa, there's some indications that her father lived in Sandy Hill and that she might have grown up in the Sandy Hill area during her younger years.
I mean, Barbara Ann Scott, like, that's a major figure in Canadian sports history.
Yeah, Canadian sports history, cultural history, you name it. That's an important contributor to who we are as a nation and our history.
Yeah, she has a permanent exhibit at City Hall.
Yes, that's right.
Which is really good. It's a good exhibit. And if you're in Ottawa and around City Hall, I would encourage you to go in. It's free as long as the building is open. You can walk through it.
City Hall being on Laurier Avenue, if you just continue going east after stopping in and seeing that exhibit, that's where you start with Prime Minister's Row.
Right, right. So it's everything sort of over the canal. And then obviously it would be past the University of Ottawa because, I mean, there's really nothing left in terms of Prime Minister stuff that would be left because the University of Ottawa has taken it all over.
Yes, yes. But obviously there's still the mainstays of, say, Laurier House at the corner of Laurier and Chapel, in which Sir Wilfrid Laurier lived there for quite some time. And then following his death, Lady Laurier actually sold the house to William Lyon Mackenzie King, and he lived there for quite some time. And now that's a museum that's owned and operated by Parks Canada. So there are indications of important people, but in my opinion, there's not enough. And that's why I was really excited to get involved with this project, to help shape our capital and to help shape the city of Ottawa and make it more interesting, if you will.
Now, I can almost hear people you know talking to either themselves or to their computers or however they're listening to this, if they're in the car, talking in the car. And one of the things that people would be critical or could be critical about this project for is that, you know, do we really need another outlet to talk about these old white men who were prominent figures in the 19th century?
Mm-hmm.
And is something like this really necessary? So how does the project responding to any sort of possible notion that maybe this sort of thing is redundant given how much attention these people have already gotten?
That is certainly a fair criticism, and it's certainly something that the Prime Minister's Row has thought about. And this project is not just about old white guys that have been prime minister or been politicians. This is about celebrating a community. This is about highlighting the contributions of many different people, many different cultures that have helped shape this national capital in some way, shape, or form. It's not, although the name of the project is the Prime Minister's Row, it's not just about prime ministers. As I said, it's a community. It's about creating a street museum that celebrates the diversity, the cultural impacts, the history of our city and of our nation.
That is fair. And it's one of those things that it's hard to reconcile the something like this, the lived history, when you're saying, we want to follow where these people lived. I mean, these people lived where they lived. If that, I don't know the history of Sandy Hill, but if it was an exclusionary or a neighborhood that excluded certain people, certain groups, that's the sort of thing that can also be noted mm-hmm. in a project like this and say these people lived here and some other folks didn't because this is the way the neighborhood was. To me, and maybe this is just history on Twitter, and I've noticed it a lot more, or because I'm now in the United States and everything here is so polarized, I have no idea. But it strikes me that people either want to celebrate or condemn, and there's no room for anything in the middle. Mm-hmm. And something like this could be a middle ground.
Oh, yeah. It's a good way to highlight what made our nation's capital so vibrant. And it celebrates the impact of various ethnic and cultural communities in and around Sandy Hill. One of the mainstays of this project is the All Saints Church, and that's going to be used as basically the center ground of this, to have a virtual museum of the prime ministers that lived there, but also to highlight some of the other communities and the other demographics that helped shape this area. It's not to whitewash history, for lack of a better term. It's about presenting history as it was. And it's about bringing to focus the impacts and the influences of a group of people, not just old white guys who are prime ministers.
And because of that, this is the sort of thing that the University of Ottawa for sure could take advantage of. And the University of Ottawa, I had a very good experience there. I think the faculty and the history department are very good. The one thing that grates me a little about it, especially when you look at what happens at Carleton, now granted, Carleton is the public history program, and a lot of this stuff happens within the public history program, but Carleton makes use of the city really well in a way that the University of Ottawa doesn't. I know some faculty members will take classes to museums and the archives and such, but it needs to happen more, and something like this strikes me as something that a Carleton public history class would do these sort of walking tours. And the fact that something like this is so close to the University of Ottawa, really, I really hope the university takes advantage, maybe not necessarily of this, but or makes better use of the resources of Ottawa, because it is such an interesting way to engage people in the past that is, I mean, I kind of like lectures and I like lecturing. But by no means would I suggest that I'm nearly as engaging as the opportunity to go and do more experiential learning.
Building off of your point, think about for a first-year history course at the University of Ottawa, and instead of having a lecture, the professor could say, your assignment or your task for the day is to walk the Prime Minister's Row and just make note of what happened and to experience Canadian history firsthand and to place these people in the historical landscape and to say that, oh yeah, these people actually lived. They did, you know, they had to sleep somewhere. They had to have their meals somewhere, and to make more of a connection between history and reality.
Right. And to remember, you know, they're people. They are actually people.
Exactly.
You know, I think Colbert made a joke about, like, people ask him if celebrities have to go to the bathroom, and he lied and said yes. it's this notion that we don't think of celebrities or notable figures, past and present, as actual human beings.
Yeah, we put them on pedestals and we picture them as these larger than life figures, but as you said, they were people. They had their own trials, their own tribulations, their own ups and downs. And what could be more unifying as humans than having a place to lay your head at night?
Right. And struggling to wake up the next morning.
Well, of course. Well, we all know how much of a struggle that is. You more so than others, you know, in your normal wake up time of 10 o'clock.
I have scaled back.
Really?
I have a permanent alarm set at 9.
My goodness.
I know, Harvard's it's really a major adjustment. Now, granted, my apartment in Ottawa is quite dark, and here I have this big bay window, and the sun just beats on me in the morning. So it's hard to sleep past that. But
so you're on Harvard time now.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Which is actually a thing, by the way, Harvard time.
Oh, I believe it.
Every class here starts 7 minutes after the hour.
Really?
Yeah, so if your schedule says the class starts at 2, it really starts at 2:07.
So is that where Major League Baseball got their idea for first pitch at 7:07?
I would like to think that that's true.
Okay.
I don't think it is, but I would like to think that it's true. Yeah, somebody told me I read about this. It was estimated that whenever they decided to do this, that's how long it took to get across campus.
7 minutes.
7 minutes.
Okay.
So if you had a class that ended at 2 and the next one was scheduled to start at 2, you can get to that next one on time. Now, the campus is much larger than it used to be, so it is impossible to get across campus in 7 minutes now. But that is where it stands. So Harvard time is very much a real thing.
Yeah, I would have a hard time getting across Harvard. I remember when I was there visiting you in September, it took me quite a while to walk the campus.
Yeah,
of course, I was stopping every 20 feet to look around and just kind of absorb Harvard. But even on a very direct route, I can imagine it wouldn't take 7 minutes.
Right, because there are no direct routes here. Because there's no straight. Nothing is straight. There are no straight lines in this town.
No, I certainly remember that.
Yeah, it's quite ridiculous. But anyway, so you were mentioning too before, you've come across some really, you know, we talk about, you know, the serious stuff and we like serious stuff, but we also like the sort of fun, more anecdotal stuff. So you've come across some really fun things in doing research for this.
Yes, our research team has come across some great little anecdotes and some great little things to help personalize some of these experiences. One of the ones that I kind of like, just because it's a little interesting, is that when John A. McDonald was living at Stadacona Hall, peacocks could be seen wandering around the front lawn.
Peacocks?
Peacocks. Now, anyone who has ever visited Ottawa, especially in the winter, could never imagine peacocks strutting around. But,
no, I don't think they would enjoy it.
No, but peacocks on the front lawn of Stadacona Hall of Prime Minister McDonald. I mean, that would have been a sight.
That would have been fun.
I think that would have been really cool to see.
Is that like the 19th century equivalent of putting up Christmas lights?
That, or maybe garden gnomes?
Garden gnomes, that's a good one, yeah. Instead of like the plastic pink flamingo, you just go get yourself a peacock.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, why not?
Why not, eh?
Why not, eh? And then one of the other ones that I really enjoyed and that I wanted to share involved John Diefenbaker, the Prime Minister of Canada in the mid-20th century.
Dief the Chief.
He did indeed live along Laurier Avenue. And he lived at 214, in apartment 214 at 404 Laurier Avenue East, the apartment that's known as the Strathcona. Now, our researchers have uncovered that John Diefenbaker lived in the right wing of this apartment building.
It's quite fitting.
Quite fitting indeed. And yet, at a different time in history, so not concurrently, but at a different moment, Tommy Douglas, the famous founder of Medicare here in Canada and healthcare in Canada, actually lived in the left wing of the same apartment.
How great is that?
I think you can't make that up.
You really can't.
It's one of the great things about history that it's so strange that it has to be true.
How great would it be if that was a conscious choice?
Knowing Diefenbaker, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a conscious choice, that he is like, I have to live in
the right side
of the house.
That's great. So wait, he lived in an apartment while he was Prime Minister?
Not while he was Prime Minister, but okay. he did live in Sandy Hill for some time.
Okay, because that would be weird. Like, you go back to your apartment building and the Prime Minister is next door.
Yeah, that would be kind of interesting. He moved in 1956, so the year that he became the leader of the opposition.
Okay.
So yeah, not Prime Minister, but yeah.
That would be weird too.
You think so?
Leader of the opposition is next door? Like an MP, fine. Like a backbencher, like whatever. You see backbenchers around Ottawa all the time because nobody really knows who they are, particularly if they're a backbencher from not the Ottawa area.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't really get much attention except for amongst political junkies and the people who are involved in politics. So, you know, backbenchers are walking around Ottawa all the time, and you can generally spot them, but sometimes you can't. You'd have to actually know who they are. So a backbencher moving into your apartment, like, that wouldn't strike me as that weird a thing. You know, they need a place to live in Ottawa. They probably don't want to buy a house because they would have a house or whatever their living arrangement is back home, place to crash. So that would make sense. But the leader of the opposition, this is somebody who everyone knows who they are. I think they get some form of a security detail. Like, that would be a little more intense, having the leader of the opposition next door.
Oh, for sure. I mean, imagine walking out your front door to grab your newspaper or something like that, and there's Diefenbaker in a bathrobe.
That'd be great.
That would be great.
That would be great. It reminds me, there was I can't remember the comedian. It was a British comedian who was talking about the Buckingham Palace tour. And she said she went on it, was disappointed because she didn't, they show you the official stuff, but she wants to see, like, the real raw stuff, like go into the kitchen and see a note on the fridge that says, "Don't forget to open Parliament." Like, that's the sort of stuff. So if you had the leader of the opposition next door, like, maybe they would have notes on their fridge that says, like, "Speech from the throne next Thursday, prepare a rebuttal."
Yeah. And then, you know, scribbles everywhere with little post-it notes around the house.
Yeah. Like, you actually see how somebody actually lives that way.
That's
it'd be fun.
It would be good.
Yeah, but
that could be a good alternate history.
It could be, or it could be something for drunk history too.
That is true, or, you know, maybe part of the Twitter sphere.
Yeah, that'd be a good fake Twitter thing for any variety of these fake
Twitter handle, fake John Diefenbaker.
Sorry?
Fake John Diefenbaker on Twitter.
We like that. We like that. I think there's a bunch of prime ministers on Twitter. Like, there's the Sir Johnny McDonald Twitter handle. I have no idea who does it, but it is quite funny.
Oh, it's pretty great. In fact, us at Prime Minister's Row, we want to engage fake Johnny McDonald and other fake prime minister Twitter handles in some good back and forth conversations.
Yeah, because, I mean, those have pretty good followings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, who better to talk to than fake Johnny McDonald about his life at Stadacona Hall?
Exactly. I remember one of my favorite fake Prime Minister Twitter things. I can't remember which Prime Minister it was, but they went through and a bunch of kids were tweeting how they got into Laurier. Like, so a bunch of high school kids, whenever Laurier sends out acceptances, retweeting, "Hey, I got into Laurier." And one of these prime ministers went around and was just chirping all these kids for going to Laurier. It's a terrible place to go to school, and why would you want to go to a school named after that prime minister? It was just brilliant. Because it was so over the top that none of the kids would have taken it seriously.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. It was great. So those fake prime minister Twitter handles are a lot of fun and definitely something that you guys could engage with.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a fantastic idea and something that we should certainly look into doing.
So if people want to learn more about this project, you mentioned the website already. It's pmr-apm.ca.
Yes.
What other stuff can folks do if they're interested in what's going on?
Well, besides visiting the website and seeing what's going on, anyone and everyone can become a non-voting member of Prime Minister's Row. So there's definitely that option. So you can become a part of it with a small financial contribution to help change our city and our national capital and make it an amazing place. You can definitely check us out on Twitter. In fact, I highly recommend checking us out on Twitter. We have 150 reasons why you would love Prime Minister's Row to correspond with our 150th anniversary of Confederation coming up in 2017. And we're also on Facebook, so you can check us out there and see what's going on and propose others or other famous people that lived in around Sandy Hill that you might know of or anecdotes that you'd like to share. In particular, we want to create a database of oral history. So we want to hear right from people who lived in and around Sandy Hill or who had ancestors or family members that lived in Sandy Hill to share their memories of this area. And like as I was joking about maybe seeing John Diefenbaker in a bathrobe, maybe someone has a story from their grandmother who maybe saw
John Diefenbaker in a bathrobe.
John Diefenbaker in a bathrobe. And if you're listening and you have that story, please write into us. We have to have that story. So this, again, is a really, it's a community project. It's about engaging as many people as possible and making this project as good and as big and as national in scope as we can.
Like we say, it is a city project, but because it's the capital, it sort of has these national ramifications to it, or this national interest to it. So it goes beyond a traditional local history project. And
oh, it is. It's not just about Ottawa, and it's not just about Sandy Hill. It's about making this national in scope. So if you live out in Vancouver and you're listening to this podcast, please write us in and maybe make some suggestions. By the same token, if you're out in St. John's, Newfoundland, or if you're up in Whitehorse, please write in. This is about our country. This is about celebrating Canada as a whole, not just the national capital.
In all of its aspects.
Yes, exactly. We want to hear as many voices and as many opinions as we can on this, because as we kept saying, history is about the people that made it. And history, of course, is also about the people that are living right now, because we're going to be shaping something for the future.
Well, very well said.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That sounds almost scripted, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I promise it wasn't.
All right. I know I can't see you right now, so I do not believe you.
Okay, well, good. I'm glad, because otherwise you'd be seeing me in my Boston hoodie and you might laugh at me.
Oh, God. I see enough of that. I see enough of that in this town. So that is the man, the myth, the legend, Aaron Boyce. Don't wait so long to come back on the show next time.
I'll try not to. Please have me back on. Shoot me a message and let me know.
All right, sounds good. And like we say, Prime Minister's Row, PMR-APM.ca. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much for having me here. I really appreciate it.
If you have any questions or comments for the podcast, it is historyslam@gmail.com. Twitter is @DrShawneeFever. And if you're out and you see Enrico Palazzo, please say hi for me.
Thanks for listening to the History Slam podcast. Be sure to check out Active History for more features, articles, and be sure to subscribe on iTunes.